I did not want to be the old man saying, I went bankrupt because of an act of God. When you're in good place yourself, you know, you feel that if that cannot hurt me, what's gonna hurt me? If you don't know your customers, there's nothing there.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I'm here today with Lauren Cohen. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Jeff. Really looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We had a few questions already that we've asked in our icebreaker segment, and helps me to get to know you in a little bit different perspective, maybe, than just strictly what's your bio and where have you been and where are you going type of thing. But we're going to talk about a bunch of that today. So I'm excited to jump into the conversation. And just so our guests know, this has nothing to do with business, but as we were talking before the show, just some sirens went off. You're currently located in Israel, and we may have an interruption to the show. If that happens, that happens. You've got missile warnings that happen occasionally. You're working in an environment that is maybe not familiar to some of our audience. Is that fair to say?
That's pretty fair. Although, believe it or not, you have sirens and alerts every other hours. But if you walk down the street, life is pretty normal. But yeah. There's a point that I would like to add, because I think that could lead to a very interesting discussion, Jeff. Mm-hmm. As people are listening to me now, they might understand by the sound of my voice that I have an accent, which is a French accent. I was born and raised in France. I moved to America in 2002. And now I'm working in Israel, where we have an office. And living in those three different countries, three different environments, has made me the man I am today. And there's this thing, you don't talk about countries with general thing. But if I had to summarize those three places in a funny way, because I would say that when you leave America, I noticed that when someone, and I'm talking business-wise, but mostly, but someone tells you no, usually it means yes. And when someone tells you yes, usually it means no. The reason is, when you start engaging, let's say it's a customer or a provider of service, if they're interested with your product, they're going to tell you no, because it's a way to engage in negotiation. But where they're not interested, they're going to say, oh, yes, it's beautiful. We are doing something great. Let's call again. And you never hear from them. Okay, yes. So that's America. Then when you're in Israel, you know, and there's this sense of urgency, for the reason you easily understand, a yes is a yes and a no is a no. You know, no time to waste. No, we're not beating around the bush. Now, when you're in France, where there's this sense of craftsmanship, a yes and a no are both a maybe. You know, it's always a sense of hesitation, and so, you know, it's a funny way to express this, but I think it's pretty accurate, and it's very helpful as far as dealing with international businesses.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think, one of the reasons that we're doing this show is to bring people new perspectives, right? Especially those people who are growing a business, maybe haven't been down the path before, and they get to hear from people like you who've been down this path before, maybe multiple times before. And so they get perspectives. And so the same way that you're drawing on perspectives from your experience living in different countries, and that in itself might be valuable perspectives for some people who've never been there, you know, but I love that you're not only have you had those experiences, but you've found a way to articulate them and say, oh, here's how they're the same, or here's how they're different. That's exactly why we're having the show. So you're a great guest already, Laurent.
Thank you, Jeff. But, you know, for anyone listening that is looking forward to expanding its business abroad, wherever you're based from, the cultural factor is essential.
Yeah.
You do not build a business abroad if you do not understand the country and the people you're dealing with. And I have many examples of things I've done good and things I've done wrong in that field. But I have to say that do not expect other societies, other culture, to understand your product, your advertising, your marketing, only by the way you are selling it. And as it doesn't matter how much money you're spending, you know, unless you're Coke, obviously. But Coke started 100 years ago, and it was not probably easy. You know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of barriers that need to be jumped. And those are also some things we can discuss after, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, I'm curious, from all your time that you've spent in these different locations, what kind of business experience did you gain along the way? Give our listeners some background as to the things you've done in the U.S. or France or now in Israel that lead up to today.
Okay, initially, my first one company back in France was an environmental company. And the very interesting thing with that company was that I was dealing with businesses from all sorts of sizes, from SMBs to public companies to country level, you know, companies. I could have days where I was literally talking in the morning with a single solopreneur and ending the day with a C-plus management team. This is the kind of experience that you have at a young age that really teaches you a lot about adjustments. I had literally to change my clothes, basically, during one day, just to adjust to the people I was talking to.
Yeah.
It teaches you a lot about not only sales, but about the relationship. You know, you need to have lunch with people, you need to move around town to go see different places. And it teaches me a lot. Then when I came to America, I started an e-commerce company, and it was 2002, which was right after the internet bubble.
Yes.
So pretty interesting. You know, Google was barely starting at that time.
Right.
I went from, again, talking with so many different people to being in front of a computer all day. And relationship I had was still existing with my customers, but it was, you know, with an interface that was a website, emails, you know, we even hardly had any phone call. So the adjustments were also very important, you know, moving from a brick and mortar company to a digital company was a change a lot.
Yeah.
And now, with the new project that we're building, which is an AI company. Now, it's not that I'm interacting with people. I'm interacting with agents.
Yeah, yes.
So it's, again, something that changes a lot of perspective. But the good thing is that at the end of the day, AI is not the one who are buying a solution. They're still humans. So if you think that today you are building an AI company and you are solely focused on agent and AI, you have it wrong. You need to focus on our customers. You need to remember that you have, at some point, human in front of you. This is why, again, I'm circling back to what I said initially. You know, read the emails, read the message, you know, get in touch with the end customers. You know, keep the pulse on what you're doing. Because when you start a company, you know, you're a dreamer. You think you have the best product. Then you start diving into building the product, you know. But let me tell you that much. As long as you don't have and you don't know your customers, you don't have a business.
Yeah.
You can build forever the solution, the product. If you don't know your customers, there's nothing there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting that you mentioned. I mean, I haven't heard it put that way before, but it makes perfect sense. You know, the buyers, all the buyers today are human. You need to know your human audience, even though there is AI embedded throughout the whole process. It makes me wonder if there'll be a time when AI is the buyer at some point, but maybe we'll leave that for another day. I want to focus kind of just a little bit on the context that you're providing and just draw it out for people that are listening. They're probably hearing the same thing. You've maybe mastered or are mastering the art of understanding your audience, whether that's culturally, you know, where you go and who you're talking to, the language that you're using, the audience that you're, the customer audience or target market that you're selling into, different types of things. Like, do you think that this is one of your strengths, is to be able to assess from the audience perspective, or the you know, audience might be the wrong word, because when you're talking culturally with somebody, you wouldn't refer to them as an audience necessarily. But you know what I'm saying? The people you're talking to, do you feel like you're mastering how to see things from their perspective, and how to, in a way, maybe even translate what you're saying so that it is more effective talking to that audience?
I do. And it's not only about the cultural aspect. It's mm-hmm. also about intuition. And it's a big discussion here, because again, you know, when you're young and you have your assumptions, you also have intuition, or you don't. You know, some people have intuition, some don't. And the more you go in life, the more things happen to you, you know, you start doubting your intuition.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I think that losing that aspect as a business owner, you know, and that's probably one of the things we're going to discuss when we talk breakout, you know.
Yeah.
Not trusting your intuition at some point is something that happens when you start to scaling up. The bigger your company gets, the more people you hire, the more interaction you have within your company, the more you ask yourself, maybe I should listen more to the people around me, you know? Hmm. Because when you start a company, when you're probably 1, 2, 3 person initially, you know, it's yourself and your intuition. And
yes,
it works, or it doesn't. Well, if you're here, it works. But then when you start hiring, you know, you may think that you need to put your intuition aside and let people talk a little bit and listen to them. And this is probably the main issue I had when I scaled, putting my intuition aside. So now I'm back and I trust my intuition. And it's exactly what leads me to think that the intuition makes me also understand who my customers are and how I can deliver the best solution for them.
That makes a lot of sense. And I ask people in the icebreaker segments that we're doing, a lot of times I'll ask, and I didn't ask you this, you know, earlier, but I'll ask you now, because intuition is, I don't know if you would call that the same thing as gut, but I like to ask people, do you like to make decisions on your data that you are collecting, or on your gut instinct? Which, or do you have one that you favor over the other, or how do you use instinct or your intuition in this case, either versus the data or with the data?
Intuition first, gut instinct first.
Okay.
Datas are information. Datas nourish my intuition, you know, whether you know it or you don't at the moment you receive that information. And the fact that I told you earlier that I'm constantly looking at datas, you know, you don't just look at the data in the morning and say, oh, this happened, I'm going to pivot my company. No,
yeah.
you just get things. You know, it comes to you, you know. And if you go there enough, it becomes an habit, you know. It should not make you change your mindset or make you pivot. It should make you adjust what you're doing. So the adjustment is one thing, but the intuition is the other one.
Yeah.
So the intuition, it's what drives you. The data is what makes you go slightly left and right to make sure you're taking the right path.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
But also, intuition doesn't mean you need to be stubborn. No, it's two different things.
Yeah, I mean, there's some mix, right? Data, but I think a lot of people, and I come at this from an engineering perspective too, from my early years, you know, doing electrical engineering before law school, and I think about it, and I've always struggled because I'm a big picture person. I'm like, I want to see the whole picture, so I'm kind of the type of person who says, "Give me all the data," but then my gut instinct says, "But can I trust the data that I've got?" And now I've got to use my intuition. You know, I might have good data or I might have bad data, but I've got to use my intuition to make a judgment call about the quality of that data before I use the data to make a decision. And I feel like that sometimes can be a, you know, kind of a layered process, right? Intuition, data, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And all of a sudden, now you come out with hopefully the best answer.
Yes. And also when it comes to data and especially numbers, you can make numbers tell you anything you want them to tell you, you know, it's always the perspective from where you're staying. So you have to keep a distance with your metrics, you know, so yeah. They're here, they give you information on past events, not on future events. You know, people get confused, you know, when they watch, they look at metrics, they think they are data that are going to tell you what's going to happen. No. They tell you what has happened and what is happening, not what's not going to happen.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is the decision you're going to take upon those data with your intuition, with your team, and whatever you're building.
Yeah. And then all the external factors are going to change that along the way. So lots of those, huh? Let's dig into a breakout moment that you've had in your journey building different companies. And I'd like to get the audience a little bit of context. Tell us about the company where you maybe had your biggest breakout moment, and you know, who was there, who was on your team, what was the kind of range of revenue that you were in at the time, and then of course, what was the issue you were dealing with that prompted you to maybe step back and earn or gain a new perspective on the problem.
I've got a very interesting story about that.
Good. I'm excited.
Get ready. When I started my first digital company in e-commerce back in 2002, it was immediate success. We were selling health and beauty products, and we were selling basically American products abroad. Remember what we said earlier? The fact that I had a sense of... The different cultures. Well, mm-hmm. we had the Spanish version, French version, German version, English version, Portuguese versions.
What kind of product was it? Just health and beauty, but anything specific?
70% supplements and 30% aesthetic. No,
okay.
Serums, stuff like that. Basically, you know, I understood very quickly that there was a market for American products that were not distributed abroad.
Got it.
So it went very fast. Then Google came in the picture, which means SEO, SEM. So I got very much educated on the subject and had very good success in that field, in those fields. And everything went very well, right? So nevertheless, around 2007, 2008, business was blooming, but there was this glass ceiling that I could not break. I was doing great, right? But yeah. You know, it was right around $3.54 million a year. No,
okay. And you've been building this for like 5 or 6 years now, or 4 or 5 years, something like that. And
yeah, four years.
Okay. So you had some success growing it to that point, but
I had extraordinary margins. My margins were amazing. I was around 38%. So yeah. Crazy.
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. So I could not complain, but you know, you know you can do better, but you don't understand why. You know, you don't understand the limitation. And you start sharing that with other people, other business owners. And eventually you hear that this specific level is kind of known. You know, people know that whatever you're selling, you know, this 4 years, you know, step when you think you need to hire, you need, what do I need to do? You know, you're kind of lost and you're talking with people. And then what I did is I'm a big believer of serendipity.
Okay.
You have things coming your way that you don't expect, you know, that look negative, you know, and, you can absorb them, right? The only difference is that when you're young, you know, you have these emotions that come in place that you kind of take when you get older.
Yes.
But, you know,
well, I'm curious, before this serendipitous moment, what did your team look like? Or what, you know, you're doing around $4 million a year supplements and other beauty products. What did you have a team with you? Did you have, was it, what did that look like?
Yeah, we were 12.
Okay.
I'd say we had seven persons were in warehouse shipping, you know, mm-hmm. Everything like that. Four were focused on the website, the data, implementing products, orders, you know, stuff like that.
And did you have somebody on your team that was helping you that was like kind of a partner to you, or were you kind of managing this business more on your own with their help, of course?
No, on my own.
Okay.
And it felt good. To be honest.
Felt good, but then you almost sometimes are more susceptible to falling into the same traps that other companies have fallen into at the same moment in their business, right? Because you don't necessarily have other people to go to. So you were talking to other people to try to figure out, hey, what do I do? Like I'm hitting this roadblock. How do I get around this?
Exactly. Because, you know, I see myself as a creative business owner. I have ideas. I have ideas. I can create product, create. It's constant flow of ideas, you know. But when you become to when you start to scale, you know, you have KPIs, you know, you need to have visibility, you know, mm-hmm. you need to all the financial aspect to it also, you know.
Yeah.
And then you have operational complexity, you know, you have all kinds of things. And when you're a creative person, you know, this is something that you don't take comfortably. How do you go from, you know, being able to express yourself as a business owner to having to limit your expression because now, you know, things are getting serious, you know?
Yeah.
So this is an adjustment that is very hard to make.
And did it come naturally to you to do this, or were you, because I think I've seen a lot of creators who have businesses and I often think to myself, these guys need a really high margin business. Because they want to spend their time creating, and as long as there's money, they can do that. But they need a buffer because creatives tend to not notice some of the signals that are happening around them, right? Because they're creating something new instead of looking at the business and how it's operating in the moment, and so they don't necessarily recognize the warning signs when they're there, right?
This is exactly it. You know, how could I express it? You're in kind of a reactive growth. No, instead of durable growth. No, you're always reacting to what's coming to you because you don't like it. It's not something. It's not the thing you want to do during your day. No.
Yeah. So yeah.
Having to face all those complexities and problems. So
that makes
when
sense.
You so circling back to what we were starting to discuss. You know, my big breakout came from people around me in my community starting to understand what were my skills as a business owner. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people came to me with their problems, you know, when I talked to you about serendipity, you know, for advices, you know.
Yeah.
So I became some kind of consultant, you know. I had every week people coming to my office ask me, oh, how do you do SEO? How do you do SEM? You know, where do you manufacture your product, you know? And I was very happy to share those information. You know, that was not a problem for me. Then came the time where a guy heard about me and he had built a small fragrance business, mm-hmm. internet business, that was doing what I did, basically selling abroad perfumes. And he came to me and said, yeah, you know, I've got some kind of successes with SEO, SEM, but I'm not a good manager. I don't know what I'm doing. So I invested in his company and integrated it with mine. Huh. Then a year after, I had the same opportunity with another company that was selling toys abroad.
You said toys?
Toys, yeah.
So you're in health and beauty, fragrances, and you're like, hey, maybe I'll do toys too.
You know what? This was exactly the same for me. Basically, this was having a website with SEO and SEM, which was I knew, selling to Europe, which was something I knew, and in my warehouse, which I had, logistic was ready. Whatever you put in the package, whether it's a supplement, a perfume, or a toy, for me, it's the same job, you know?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
So you were buying these companies up there. When you say invested, were you actually just acquiring the company and
I was taking a majority part on it. Yeah.
Okay.
But usually in both instances, the initial owner came to work for me.
Got it. Makes sense.
Yeah. So those options that came to me were literally my breakout moment. So basically, and remember, at that time, there was no podcast. You know, there was not the option of discussing with videos people and having people reach out to you. You know, it was really local. It was really local for me. And the fact that I had been able to make a name for myself in those skills, you know, and a reputation gave me opportunities.
Yeah.
So now, talking about breakout moments, Jeff, I think as a business owner, working on your reputation is very important. This is probably what provided me with the best opportunities, you know, having a reputation. And I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't build that reputation because I expected that in return. No, it was just a fact. The fact that I liked sharing, that I liked people, you know, I share ideas, you know, and soon enough, you know, those sharing moments become opportunities.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I mean, two thoughts on this. Your story reminds me somewhat of the story, the breakout moment that John Richards shared. He was maybe episode 3 or something. He's here in Utah and was running a business. It was like a Yellow Pages type business, but somehow because he was in that field, somebody else just came to him and said, "Hey, have you done this? Have you considered doing this online or something like that?" Right. And so he wasn't even seeking the opportunity, but it came to him because of what he was involved in and who he was and who he knew. And all of a sudden he had an opportunity to build a, you know, maybe the world's first online Yellow Pages type of business and did well with it. So you had the same experience in a sense. Were you out there doing, I mean, you say that people are coming to you with questions. Were you doing like formalized coaching or paid services? Or was this just a fact that you're in the network with people who are doing similar things and they said, "You know what? I got this problem. I know who to go to. I'm going to go to Laurent. He'll have a few minutes. He'll have some thoughts, maybe some answers." And it was just all informal. Is that how it was?
Totally informal. Totally out of generosity. Never expected anything in return.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way of life. You know, you can decide to be scared of everyone, you know, thinking, "Oh, they're going to steal my idea. They're going to steal my business. They're going to, you know, they're coming for something to take out of me." You know, if you're competent enough to know that what you're doing is who you are, you know, sharing and helping other people is a good mentor. It has never hurt me. Never.
Yeah.
So,
well, it sounds like it might have helped you, right? You were stuck in the...
It has helped me. But the decision to be something that would lead to that was never in my head. I would never have expected that. You know, when I was telling you that I was hitting the glass ceiling, those opportunities of expanding through different other venues didn't come to my head. I was trying to stay in my field, you know, to see how I can expand my ads, my products, whatever. But I never would have dreamt of having someone coming to knock on my door and say, "Well, I've got this company that sells fragrances and I'm lost and I need help." You know, it just came. It was door open. But it was also the 100th person that came, you see?
Yeah. Was it exciting to you when they came and asked you if you wanted to be involved in their business? Or was it kind of like, "I'm busy. I'm trying to work on my own problem"? Like, how did you approach that? And I get that you said before it was you had a team of 12 and you kind of were running the business. So you had the luxury, I guess, of making those decisions without necessarily needing approvals from other people. But what was that like when they came to you and they said, "I think I need some help. Can you be involved with me?"
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind-the-scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Okay. Very interesting. Two things. First, those people, those two persons, and actually I had many other stories like that. They never come to you saying, I need your help.
Okay.
They come to discuss now. And then you understand soon enough. And again, if you have intuition, you understand very quickly that they need help and that they're looking for help. You know, we're not in the negotiation phase yet. No, you just know something. They need something, you know, and usually when they come to you, the business is not exactly where it should be. There, you see that they're kind of stressed, you know, there's all this, again, human relationship that you are understanding, you know. Then the second thing, and then I'm coming back to the metrics, you know. Mm-hmm. I know my work. I know what they're doing from the moment they pass the door. I need to ask three questions, okay? Show me your website, okay? Okay. Or let's open Google. How many products do you have in stock? No, you have those 5-6 questions. And again, for anybody listening as a business owner, if you know well enough your work, your line of work, any other company that's similar, you know, it would take only 5 minutes to understand where they are at and their opportunities. And in both cases, it literally took me 3 minutes to understand that there was something. Because at that time, I had this habit of looking at my metrics every single morning so that when I see anybody else's metrics, you know, it talks to me. I know what I'm seeing. You know, I know those numbers. I know exactly what they're doing. You know, like it's like I had spent 6 months in their office, you know, just watching a couple of pages.
As a creator, how were you able to develop the skill of knowing what metrics to look at and interpret? Because I think a lot of people, whether they're creatives or not, I think actually understanding their metrics is a lot harder for them than what it sounds like it should be.
First of all, for me, being creative doesn't go against being rigorous and understanding numbers. I mean, you can be very creative and understand numbers. I do. And
that
makes
sense.
I would not be able to work if I didn't have numbers in front of me.
Okay.
It just doesn't work. I can't. So as creative as I can be, you know, I need those numbers. I need to see numbers, whatever they are, whatever they located. You know, I need those numbers. So in the contrary, I would say to any entrepreneur out there that if they have no idea of those numbers within their company, something is wrong.
Yeah.
And we can go deep into what those numbers are. But I would every single morning look at every single order, I had my daily margins, my weekly margins, my monthly margins. I had everything, you know. And actually, the funny thing is I didn't use a software for that. I use solely Excel files.
Oh, really?
My Excel files. And I still do that to that day, whatever the company size I'm used to. You know, if you work 30 years, you know, using Excel, you know, keep using Excel, you know. Of course, you have wonderful tools available nowadays, but sometimes it's reassuring, you know, because your eyes, your habits are built upon certain tools. So keeping those tools, you know, is very reassuring. I'm still doing that.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. So you bought these companies, or you invested in these companies? You brought them into your company, or your holding, you know, whatever structure you had. What was the impact that it had on your business? Sounds like your team might have grown a little bit because you absorbed some other people. I imagine revenues went up. Did margins go up? Did they go down? Was there a learning curve? What did it take to get these businesses integrated and stabilized with your existing company?
the beauty of it was that the integration was immediate and very smooth. I didn't have to scale much more in terms of employees and structure.
Okay.
Literally, I just had to take the office, the warehouse next door to expand my warehouse. That's it.
Okay.
That's it. I had to adjust a few employees here and there for logistics, but that's it.
Everything, but you had the systems, same. You had employees with some additional capacity. And so you were able to just say, we got more product and we got a bigger space and keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. And a few more websites. That's it. That's it. I had a few things. I took some migration, you know, going from certain website platforms to others, you know, very simple things for me to do. Very simple. So literally once we signed the agreement, we were up and running the next day, literally the next day.
The next
just
day.
Just had to move. The next day, just have to move the warehouse, you know, put a desk for the other business owner, you know, in a desk next to me, and we're up and running. Now, I, as a business owner, I want to go deep into everything the guy is doing. I want to understand why he did wrong. Why did he have to knock at my door? Because when you see a company that's supposed to be doing perfectly fine, and the guy is messing with it, you know, you have to understand why he's messing with it, because you don't want to carry that load to the next step. Okay. So that was the main focus for me. The other things were very easy, you know, as far as, and also you have to make sure the person understand that you are the leader. You know, you need to, you know, no more fooling around, you know, this is how it's going to work. You're going to do what I do and you're going to be successful. So this is what happened. And now, when I talked to you earlier about serendipity, this happened between 2008 and 2009, right when we have the financial crisis.
Yes.
So I was blooming, breaking my glass ceiling while the world was crumbling around me, mostly because I was selling abroad. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that I was doing great when everybody was down.
Yes.
And this was the most problematic thing for me, but I had to learn that afterwards. You know, it gave me a sense of invincibility. You know, everything goes well for you. You know, you have opportunities, your company grow. And then, you know, there's a reality. You know, I was living in Florida, you know, you get out of the office and you see people, you know, business shutting down, house to sell, you know, it was terrible time. But when you're in good place yourself, you know, you feel, okay, if that cannot hurt me, what's going to hurt? Right? Well, something came out. and that's what interesting. So right now I've got the health and beauty company. I've got the toy company. I got a fragrance company. Now 2009 is a beautiful year.
Yeah,
I'm ready for 2010. 2010 is even better. This is crazy. So now I'm looking at KPI. Now I'm looking at the future. Now sky's the limit for me.
How much had your business grown? You were doing 4 million in like 2007 or 8.
In two years, I doubled.
Oh, okay, fantastic. That's a lot of growth.
Well, yeah, I was very happy, and especially that my margin were around 22%.
Okay.
On average.
Yeah.
So it was very good.
Yes.
Very good. So now comes the end of 2010, and you know, selling toys and fragrances gave me, back in 2009, the year before, the understanding of what the Christmas time is in commerce and e-commerce.
Yes.
It's an amazing thing. Yeah, you know, this is huge. So yes. The season starts in October. And we are ready. The warehouse is packed with inventory. You know, the team is ready to work. You know, I have team scheduled to work 7 days a week. You know, even at night when we're getting closer to Christmas, we're ready. And around early December, we're shipping 1,500 packages per day.
Yeah,
which is nice. You know, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
we're doing very well. Doing very well. Then I wake up on December 10. I remember I feel invincible, Jeff. Remember that?
Yeah. How old were you at the time, by the way, approximately?
Oh, no, not approximately. I was 39.
Okay. Okay.
No, 17. Yeah, 39.
Okay.
Yeah, everything was perfect. It was perfect. Except that I opened the television and I don't know if you remember that Iceland volcano that erupted. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. It caused like an ash cloud across like northern Europe, right?
Exactly. No plane could fly. Every plane were landed. Okay. So what does it mean?
And you were shipping overseas.
Tens of thousands of packages that were stuck in Jamaica, New York.
Oh, really?
And now, keep in mind, those are Christmas gifts, mostly.
Yes, yes.
So, and the second thing is that you do not know when the ash cloud is going to disappear. People say, well, it might disappear tomorrow. It might take 2 days, 3 days. So, you know, it's okay. It happens, you know, kind of stressed, but it happens. But then it lasts a week, then 2 weeks, then 3 weeks. We're getting closer to Christmas. We receive thousands of emails per day.
Yes.
I remember at that time, we didn't have AI. You know?
Right.
So we try to control that. I spend my day replying to thousands of email, of course, with a team of 3 persons. You know, we're just trying to maintain, you know, the relationship customer thing. This is not a scam. Your packages are just stuck there because of the ash cloud. But yes, people don't care. It's Christmas. They want their gift, you know?
Yeah.
So we go, we pass Christmas, and the ash clouds, I believe, start disappearing around the 23rd or 22nd, I don't remember. So we have a lot of late packages, okay? We contain what was at that time the main risk for our company, which was the chargeback about, okay? When you're an e-commerce company, chargeback is the number one thing. You don't want to lose your merchant services.
Yeah.
Except that on January 10, Monday, I remember all my life, I come in the morning and I see this email from Bank of America that says that my merchant services are canceled. I called the guy on the email, you know, he was in Tampa, I don't even know him. And he says, no, that's it. And I tried to explain to him that we contain our issue to 1.4%, which was great compared to this act of God that happened, you know, force of nature. Yeah.
He didn't care. They said, didn't care. Not our problem.
That's not my problem. That's right. You're 1.4%, you're done. Okay. Now it's a boxing match, right? I have broke that glass ceiling.
Yeah.
I have made my breakout. Yep. I went through 2008 crisis, you know, and now I don't have a merchant service and you don't get another merchant service. You know, you just, what happens? What do you do next? You know, I remember all my life, I came back to my wife at the end of the day without a word, you know, and at the moment I opened the door, she saw my face like I was on a boxing ring. You know, I was done. And, it took us a couple of weeks to find one of those shark gray zone merchant service that charge you 12% fees, you know, just to get you back on track, just to do business, you know. Long story short, because it's a long story, this stepped me back 3 years.
Okay.
I went from breaking the glass ceiling to getting back 3 years, you know.
Yeah.
And my merchants were vanished because I had to pay fees and stuff. And it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. That moment, Jeff, and this is really why I wanted to share that story with you.
Yes.
Is that you have one choice as a business owner. You know? Do you blame the act of God? Or do you find within yourself to understand what you did wrong? I found what I did wrong because I did not want to be the old man saying I went bankrupt because of an act of God. No.
Because of a volcano.
I refused to do that. What did I do wrong? And I say, yes, I got too comfortable. I was selling abroad. Eventually, things could have happened, right? When you ship thousands of packages, 8,000 miles, You know, why am I not selling in America? Why didn't I build product to sell in America? Why didn't I jump on the social media train that was started already for 3 years while I was solely looking at SEO and SEM? I did things wrong. But that issue, I had to go through that because I was feeling too invisible. I was feeling too sure of myself that I had to go through that. You know, if you're a believer, you know, some people say, you know, at some point in life and in business, especially, you need to have a lesson, right? Well, that was my lesson.
And you really took away from that, that, I mean, I'm listening to this and I respect it, but I also am like, well, but there's still, like, there was a volcano, right? There was, you know, for other people later on, you know, the boat got stuck in the canal so, I mean, these things do happen, but what you're saying is almost like, It's this hyper accountability, right? Where what else could I have done? Like, sure, the volcano happened. I didn't control that. But what else could I have done to be prepared? So do you feel like that you operate today differently because you're looking at things, I guess, not through a lens of invincibility so much now, but maybe more practicality or risk mitigation, or what would you call that?
Two things. First, because there's an end to that story and there's a great end.
Yeah.
From that moment, from that decision I took, and I took it very early on to make sure I was accountable for the issue, I built my best company ever. That was far bigger than the previous one.
Yeah.
It was a beard product company called Beardalyzer that was selling in America and then beyond all over the world. You know, I was using social media like nobody else. I was working with ambassadors that were basically a team of thousands of people selling for me. You know, they were influencers before the word influencer ever existed. You know?
Yeah.
And just because, for the sole reason that I decided that I was accountable. All the rest is practicality. What you're going to sell, how you're going to sell. This is work, okay? The decision that you are accountable for everything, I think, is what drove me into stepping back on the ring, you know, and fighting again.
So it gave you the energy or the, you know, the motivation to go back and do that. What did you do differently, though? Like, so you said, okay, I'm accountable and I'm, you know, but what did you actually do differently with Beardalyzer that you hadn't done before? Selling in the U.S. or how would you, what were the top things you did to do it differently?
I changed the whole structure of what, everything I did differently. Okay. If that makes sense. Every single thing, you know. I think it's the royal family in England. They have a saying, say, never explain, never complain. No?
Okay.
This is exactly what I decided right after the shock that I had in 2010. You know, what happened to you? Never explain. How you unhappy in life? No, never complain. Okay.
Okay.
So I put that aside. I had it in my head. You know, I was accountable, but never explain, never complain. Now let's go to work. Okay.
Yeah.
What did I do? Which were every single step that I do before that got me in that comfort zone, and what do I need to change? Who are the people I'm working with? You know, who did wrong? You know, because when you have people around you and nobody else sees that you are too comfortable, you know, something is wrong too. You know, you need as a leader when you have a business to have a team that is confronting you too. You know, putting things in perspective, telling you, but sometime, you know, they don't do that job. And I think it's necessary. I think you must have this argument, you know, this. And I think that's what you mentioned earlier, Jeff, when you said, did you have someone else, you know? That,
yeah, yeah.
Probably that was what I was lacking of, you know? And I built everything differently. The way I was, again, I was a lot focused on the digital aspect, not the human aspect. So now that I had social media, I was connecting with a lot more people, you know, business-wise. I'm not talking about the people that came in and out of the office. So I was reaching out to people a lot, you know, while I was getting out of the office. I was traveling to meet other people. I was doing so many things that I didn't do for 10 years because I was in a comfort zone where it was me, my computer, my office, and it worked well, you know?
So yeah, I can relate and not to dive into my story, but there was a time when after I first started my law practice, I remember a friend asking me about my business and I was kind of telling him how wonderful it was. I was like, it's pretty easy. You know, I have work coming in and I work so many hours a week and I, you know, provide for my family and I really don't have to do any marketing. And man, a couple of years later, and since then I've thought back on that so many times and I'm like, what? Like I knew, cause I told this friend, I said, I don't have to do any marketing. And I knew that I wasn't doing marketing and yet I was fine with it. And looking back, I'm like, you know, of course things shift and whatever. And one day I'm like, why haven't I been doing marketing all this time? Like I got so comfortable that I thought, well, I don't even have to have marketing in my business, which I think back on that 20 years later, I'm like, that's just absolutely crazy. Who would approach it that way? But I didn't have, you know, I didn't have the mentors. I didn't have the advisors and I at the moment didn't have a reason to question it other than it was not a great way to do it. So I totally understand what you're saying, I think, from that perspective.
You know, this comes back to the discussion about AI in general, you know, are we going to be replaced by AI?
Yeah.
There's so many aspects in the work field where we need the human relationship, you know? And if you think that you solely rely on machines and agents and robots and data,
yeah,
you'll be catch up. Something will catch up to you.
Yeah, that's interesting because you've mentioned a few times the importance of intuition, and you know, as spectacular as AI is and what it can do and what it will be able to do next week and the week after that, it's just going to keep getting better and better. You know, the intuition side of it, maybe there's a way to replicate intuition in machine language. I don't know, but I think for a long time, intuition is something that is going to be a real factor in successful businesses who are, even if they're leveraging the AI.
Intuition is something very personal. I don't think two people have the same intuition.
Yeah.
Really. So since AI is only reproducing what it has seen, what it has learned, there's absolutely no way. And no, the context of intuition is not only the intuition that you have inside of you, it's the context that's surrounding you. No? That's all the information that you get that nourish that intuition.
Yeah.
So, no, AI is nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
Possible. And well, I love AI, by the way. So.
Yeah, I do too, but it's got its limitations. Well, this is a fascinating story. I'm glad you shared it. Is there a lesson that you've taken from this part of your journey that you're now implementing with your business today, with Get Oblic?
Yes. Never get in the comfort zone first. And second, play the infinite game.
What do you mean by that?
In order to be scalable, I do not live by quarter anymore. I do not live by monthly. I try to go way beyond that in the vision I have, you know.
Hmm.
It's, I project my company, way beyond. And, especially now that we have AI, you know, we're breaking all the limits on anything that I can do. So I could always have relied on the fact that, oh, I'm not good at that because I don't know how to do it. I need to hire people to do it. I don't know them. Will I find the good people? Okay. Now it's done. Nothing like that anymore. Now you have AI. You can do anything. So do it. You know, so there's absolutely, no limitation that I put myself as a business owner on the vision I have on my company. Because at the end of the day, whether you do $4, $8, $12 million, you know, it's still a small business.
Yeah.
You know, you're in this, emergency every day. Whereas, you know, those large companies are far more structured and they're not on an emergency mode, you know.
Right.
A small
right.
business is on an emergency mode. So, you know, I try to focus on discipline, you know, but to be brutal with every decision I take, meaning that it should not be ever enough. Okay. I think that's the final word. Every single decision should not be enough. And as much energy I had when I was young, you know, you always reach a threshold where, again, this comfort zone, you know, oh, of course I would like more, but that's pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I'm not talking about money now, by the way. I'm talking about the hustle, you know, the growth, you know, achievement and also speed, you know, clarity, you know, every single thing that are important. You know, the framework that you're building, you know. So let me give you an example, very concrete. When I'm doing Get Oblique, you know, you start, you say, okay, you're a voice AI company. And then you could stay a voice AI company, a SaaS company, like many others. And then you say, no, I'm not that anymore. I'm a voice infrastructure layer. You know, we are gathering data from many thousands of human interaction through voice. So voice is a tool. We're infrastructure layer. You know? And from that, you move on again, you know, and you start saying, okay, I'm an infrastructure layer, but I'm also a data set that I can bring back to the million of agents we're building to train them even more. And, you know, right now we move from infrastructure asset to graph layer, where all those data are interconnected to provide a search engine used by voice only. You see, those things were not even on our mind 6 months ago.
Right, right. But with technology advancing and...
With technology and also the hustle, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, we think now that we have something more, we do it. Not we're going to see in 6 months. We do it now.
Yeah. Which being small gives you that advantage versus somebody who's big and can't turn the ship quite as quickly. So there's the pros and cons of the size, limitations and opportunities, I guess. I want to go back to something you said earlier, and maybe we'll end on this because you mentioned you're building for, you know, the infinite business, right? Not just next year or the next quarter or whatever. Another one of my friends and a guest on the show, Greg Scow, mentioned this concept. I guess there's a kind of cultural concept in Japanese businesses and maybe other locations too, where they say, we're not just building a business, we're building a business for 300 years from now. Like we're building it differently so that it lasts and endures. This isn't a quick, you know, fix and flip type of thing. It's let's build, how do we build it right so it will last effectively, you know, relative to our lives, so that it will last forever. And it's amazing to think that with all of the movement and advancement that's happening, that in some ways seems to complicate business. You know, I was just sitting down with my small legal team this morning, and the topic of AI came up again, of course, and we're talking about, okay, this client brought in this tool and they're using this, and, you know, what does that do? How do we leverage that? Does that impact the services we provide or how we provide? And of course, one attorney says, you know, I'm having this existential crisis around what our role will be in a year from now or 2 years from now. And those are all great questions to have, right? But so there's this chaos that these quick advancements introduce. But I love that you're taking the perspective of how much more powerful is it, and how much longer term can we look now that we have these powerful resources? It's almost counterintuitive to me, because I think a lot of people would say, no, it's more chaotic than it is enabling the long-term vision. And I love that you're saying, no, this is one of the tools we're going to use to build the infinite business.
Yes, Jeff. And also, you know, we're entering the era of the problem solvers. You know, it's not about the skills that you have anymore. It's about how many issues per day can you solve?
Yeah.
Because you wake up in the morning, you have 10 problems, you may solve two, and but you go back to bed, you have 20 problems. No.
Yeah.
When I say problems, to the issues, you know, or ideas of, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
And again, that's what's interesting. Life is beautiful when you think about it, you know. You not having those solutions when I was younger, you know, had me to work on my skills. But now, being older and having the experience, I'm consider myself the epitome of what a problem solver is. You know, you've been through life, you endured highs and lows, you know, you had experience. Now you're a great problem solver. You know? So I think also AI is kind of leveraging the game for older people. When I say older, I'm not talking about old people, but you know,
yeah,
we were discarded of the workplace 5 years ago.
You know? Yes. Yeah.
People, no. When you're past 50, you know, they say, okay, you're moving toward, let's look at the kid with the hoodie, you know?
Yes.
Now things have changed because as far as problem solving, only people with experience can do that, you know? And not only solving the problem, but having the emotional character to enduring and having a larger vision.
Yeah. Well, Laurent, I hope you mentioned people were the, you know, part of your breakout story was people coming to you for advice. And it's clear that you have a lot of good advice and experience to draw on for that advice. I hope that people are still coming to you, asking you for advice, maybe presenting some opportunities too, along the way. But you know, I just want to say thank you for coming on this show today, because this is a way that we're trying to, spread your advice and distribute it out to people who really need to hear from people who've been down the path before. So thank you for sharing this type of story and so many insights with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. And it was very great discussion. I mean, it went far beyond the regular question answer podcast that you can have usually. So I thank you so much. And you know, today we have so many channels to discuss. So if anybody wants to come to me and ask questions or need a little push, you know, just go on social media and I'd be more than happy to help.
Is LinkedIn the best place, or what would be a good way to connect with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn, or you go to getoblink.com and to the footers, there's like tons of social media.
Okay.
It'll get me. can reach me.
Fantastic. Well, I'm excited to see what you build with Oblik, and I do hope people reach out to you and connect with you and take advantage of a lot of the insights that you've shared with us today and the others that I'm sure you have and we didn't get to. So, Laurent, thank you so much for being on the show. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us again on another episode of The Breakout CEO.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.